WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley from Broadcasting and Cable Magazine and TVWorthWatching.com, sitting in for Terry Gross. On today's show, we continue the tour through our archives we began last Friday, keyed to the American Film Institute's new list of 100 classic American movies. This new list is divided by genre, awarding the top 10 films in 10 different categories. We start with Martin Scorsese, represented today by two films in two different genres. We'll hear about his gangster epic Goodfellas in a few minutes. But right now, we'll start with the movie the AFI called the number one film in the sports category, 1980's Raging Bull. Martin Scorsese directed it, and Robert De Niro stars as Jake LaMotta, whose boxing career is handled by his brother and manager, played by Joe Pesci. In this scene, Jake worries about his future in the arena.
What's bothering me? My hands.
My hands? What
about? I got these small hands. I got like little girls' hands.
I got them too. What's the difference?
What that means? No matter how big I get, no matter who I fight, no matter what I do, I ain't never gonna fight Joe Louis.
Yeah, that's right. He's a heavyweight, you're a middleweight. We know that.
I ain't never gonna get a chance to fight the best there is. And you know something? I'm better than him. I ain't never gonna get a chance.
Martin Scorsese finally won his first Academy Award for directing The Departed last year. 10 years before that, he was given the AFI's Life Achievement Award. And that same year, in 1997, he appeared on stage with film critic Roger Ebert to talk about his life and career and play clips from his movies. Their conversation was recorded at the Wexner Center for the Arts on the campus of Ohio State University. Ebert has retired from his Sneak Previews TV program for health reasons, but continues to write for the Chicago Sun-Times.
Frequently people will, they know I'm a movie critic, they will discuss the subject matter as if that is what the film is about. Oh, it's a film about boxing?
Yeah, I know.
Or, oh, it's a film about gangsters, or...
Right, right.
A film is not about its subject, it's about how it's about its subject.
Right, in fact, when...
Subject is neutral. People don't understand that. Whenever anybody makes a statement, I don't like to go to movies about, and then fill in the blank, my response is, anyone who makes that statement is an idiot.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true. It's true.
I don't want to go to bad films about cowboys.
Yeah.
I don't want to go to bad films about boxers.
I know.
I would like to see a good film about a boxer. Might be a more intelligent statement.
Yeah. I mean, when Bob gave me the book originally, it's back in 1974. I never saw a fight scene. I never saw a fight. My father's a big fight fan, but I didn't know anything about boxing, and I wasn't interested in films about boxing. You know, but it took those years to. For me to go my own way, to come back to understanding really what it was about.
It was about a boxer, but it wasn't about boxing. It was
right.
About the boxer.
It was about a man, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Could you set this up just a little bit by talking about two things? Number one, what people don't always, they observe viscerally, but not necessarily intellectually, how much technique went into the boxing sequences in terms of slow motion and,
yes.
And lenses and movement of camera.
What happened with the boxing sequences, once I saw De Niro perform the... nine fights. They had Jake LaMotta and Jimmy Nicholson worked out blocking for nine fight scenes, and he showed him to me in Gleason's gym on 14th Street. And I sat there, I was stunned. In fact, he came over to me, he says, are you watching? Because I'm killing myself. I said, yeah, I am. And I realized, I said, oh boy, I said, because he didn't know, he thought I was like, you know, hanging around, not watching it. I'm watching, I realized, you can't shoot this. You can't shoot this from my angle. I said, we have to be in there with him, and it's gotta be the Wild Bunch. It's gotta be, every punch has to be worked out in such a way, or let's say, not every punch, but you have to do it like music. You have to do it like I did some of the musical sequences in New York, New York, where three bars of music was one shot, literally. Not four cameras, and then you cut it together in the editing room. That's selecting, not directing. It's a different thing, you know? But directing is, you know, these four punches, one, two, three, four, camera tracks from left to right, swings around over the shoulder of the guy who's getting hit, and we see a close-up of LaMotta hitting him. And it's got to be an arc, like this, and as fast as the punches. Then on the set, we began to understand that we couldn't even see the punches, they were so fast, we had to go higher speed. 36, 48, 96, that sort of thing, just to see them. In this, you see all the speeds. But what happened was that I drew out every shot for each fight scene. There are 9 fight scenes in the film. One, I didn't draw out the shots. I think it was the second Sugar Ray fight, but I decided they was doing it with long lenses. And we put a bar of fire in front of the lens, so the heat ripples. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing was that the camera never, as much as possible, never goes outside the ring. That you're always in the ring with him. Your sensibility is taken on by his sense of, his vision becomes your sensibility. In other words, what he perceives in the ring. Sometimes I open the ring up. We had a ring that I built special where I made it longer, and sometimes wider. Mm-hmm. And it was like imagine being punched in the head. What you hear and what you perceive. You don't know where you are. It's all hallucinatory.
Breaking glass, and animal noises,
and that sort of thing. Frank Warner did that. He wouldn't tell us after a while what he was using. And he said, "I'm not going to tell anybody. You know, that's whatever it is. It's great. It's, you know, that sort of thing." Pulling out the sound, putting in the sound. All kind. We even changed speeds during a shot, which now you can do very easily with a button. But then you had to actually do with a non-blimped ARRI, and you had to change the motor and also the left stop with two assistants, that sort of thing. But in any event, what I'm saying is that it was all designed, and they were all designed shot A, B, C, D, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they all were cut together. And some of the cutting of the fight scenes was the easiest to do because it was all laid out. Mm-hmm. But it did take, we had planned 5.5 weeks of shooting for it. It did take 10 weeks. And it was very specific. And De Niro would have on the side of the camera a very big punching bag, one of those cylinder ones. It looks like mm-hmm. a cylinder. And we're ready to yell, we're ready to go for a roll. We'd have the slate ready, you know, and start rolling, and you hear off camera, punching the bag, and then he'd jump into frame, sweating, you know, and then the slate. Mm-hmm. So he came in already heated, bang, ready to go. It wasn't like, wasting any footage. But the physical stamina it took him to sustain 10 weeks of that was amazing, and because he believed in the shots I wanted to get. But what you see here is the final battle, in a way, and the punishment he takes, especially the montage when he gets beaten up by Sugar Ray, is based, in a way, the drawings I made were based on the shower scene from Psycho. And I shot it in that way. There were 39 shots, and it took 10 days just to shoot those shots. Because there were applications and all kinds of makeup problems, and just to get the angle right, it was like 10 days. And there's even a shot in there Sam Fuller told me about. He said, put the camera in the lens, put the lens in somebody's hand and just swing this way. Right? You'll see it. We even put the camera on the boxing glove, and the glove is in the foreground and comes flying at him this way. It's all in there for like maybe 5 frames, 6 frames, you know.
Let's look.
You know? Okay.
He has LaMotta on Square Street holding on. Well, certainly that was one of the most damaging evidences of punching that you have seen in recent years.
Come on! Come on!
Robinson, apparently tired, punched with a fairly well, and rocked Jake LaMotta right to the heel.
Come on, Ray.
From the ring, the crowd is standing and cheering as he just cannonaded
Jake LaMotta into a death defeat. And when I say that, I mean Jake wouldn't want to quit. He wanted to go.
Hey, Ray. Never went down, Ray. He never got me down, Ray. You hear me? Never got me down. Yeah? See? Look.
And in the 13th round, the hard luck round.
Thank you. Killer. Thank you. One thing I forgot to say before it started was that the announcer's voice, that's the actual announcer of the actual fight. The phrases he uses, amazing. No man can take this punishment. That's all real. That's actually as it was happening, you know.
Obviously, the film is in black and white.
Yeah.
It came at a time when you were involved in a battle with Eastman over the fading
color
stock, but yeah. Apart from that, didn't you believe that this film had to be in black and white?
Yeah, I believe that because an old friend of mine, Gene Kirkwood, walked by my office and remember Sweet Smell of Success. That's a great film by Alexander McKendrick with Burt Lancaster and Tony Curtis, really sort of based on Walter Winchell, mm-hmm. and had extraordinary black and white photography of New York and that world, really, James Wong Howe photography, and 1950-something, 55, I think, 56, 57. Anyway, I thought of that, and I also knew that there were four or five other boxing films coming out that year. There was the main event, Barbra Streisand, and there was Rocky II or Rocky III, I think, and there was a couple of others, and there was even Matilda, the boxing kangaroo in color. I said, think of it. I said, Oz is the only one in black and white. It's got to be different, you know? But the studio was extremely nervous about that, and we had a meeting with David Field and Stephen Bach, I think, of UA at my apartment in New York at the time. Because I was living in both places at the time, New York and L.A. And I think it's in that book, Final Cut. He describes the meeting. Interesting about Irwin as a producer, he's really quite good. And he would never let me know the difficulties surrounding the picture as it was working. For example, he told me, he said, guys, you know, David Field, they're very nice guys, actually, David and Steven. They just want to come up and see you and Bob at the apartment just to talk to you and just, you know, check in on the script and see how things are going. Just, it's a purely personal, it's a hello, goodbye meeting, that's all it is. I read Final Cut, and they're coming up in the elevator thinking they're going to cancel the picture. I said, I didn't know that. This is amazing, you know. And then one of them said something about who cares about, and they were very nice about it, but they wanted to know, I explained the black and white to them, and they went with that. And then they wanted to know why we'd want to make a film about this guy. This guy's like a cockroach. It's in the book. And De Niro just looked at me and said, he's not a cockroach. And they bought that.
Martin Scorsese and Roger Ebert in 1997 discussing Raging Bull.